Hi there. Welcome to the Biz Communication Show. I'm your host, Bill Lampton, the Biz Communication Guy. Once again, hosting a highly qualified business communication professional whose tips and strategies will boost our business because they give us winning words and ways. Today, it is an absolute delight and privilege to welcome to the Biz Communication Show, Joseph Michelli, PhD. Joseph is a certified customer experience professional, the author of 10 business books about companies like the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company, Mercedes-Benz, Starbucks, Zappos, and Airbnb. In addition to being a Wall Street Journal and New York Times number one best-selling author, Joseph helps leaders and frontline teams improve the experiences they provide to colleagues and customers. Joseph is also an internationally sought-after keynote speaker on leadership and human experience design. So I know you will join me in welcoming Joseph Michelli. Hello, Joseph.
It just feels like I'm hanging out with my friend. It's good to see you, Bill. It's good to be here.
I am glad that's the feeling you have because that's the feeling I have too. The only thing that I have as a request, Joseph, is please quit writing all those books. My bookshelf is overflowing back here.
Well, I'm glad you're buying them. I mean, I think I have sold at least one copy of most of my books, thanks to you, Bill.
Yes, I've enjoyed and benefited so much from reading your books, reviewing them on Amazon, often with a video review. And certainly 5 stars isn't enough for those books. You do a remarkable job in researching, as I remember, maybe wasn't your first book about the Seattle fish market. Is that right?
Absolutely right. I did a book on parenting long ago before that didn't really qualify. But in the business world, the first book was Pike Place Fish Market and a book called When Fish Fly.
I remember when my wife and I visited there several years ago, I thought about Joseph Michelli because they didn't make you famous. You made that place famous, Joseph. Let's face it.
I don't know. I think there were many things that came together. The leadership created an experience that drew people to it. And that's what we're talking about largely is how do you create experiences that are craveable and that people want to talk about and people want to write about. And I had a good fortune of working with Johnny Yokoyama, the owner of that market, early on. So I'm glad that the experience that he crafted was something that really was craveable and still is today, by the way.
Well, I had the same experience your book described when I was there. It was fun. It was entertaining. It wasn't just straight business, but you would want to go back there because and take the kids. I mean, it's fun watching them throw those fish around. Joseph, let's go back to the early days of your career. And I happen to know something that wasn't in the introduction. That is that you were a very popular drive time radio show host, I believe for about a decade. And, you know, I've enjoyed being in radio occasionally. It's a wonderful medium, still is. And my question to you is, in what way did that experience of being on the air, on live for about a decade in a prominent station in a great locale, in what way did that prepare you for what you do now? You speak internationally. You speak all over the United States. You're a consultant for major companies. Let's go back. What do you see in that beginning that prepared you for where you are now?
Well, like most of us, Bill, like you and I, we've got an early start in radio. I actually started when I was 13 in a small station in Canyon City, Colorado. And I did mostly evenings after school and, you know, would shut the power off on the transmitter. So it was really early on that I got to do that. I continued on in radio and worked in the Denver market for a while while I was in college and then went on to graduate school. Did not work in Los Angeles where I went to graduate school. That was just too big of a market. But I came back and I worked in Colorado Springs for a decade. The answer to your question in short is I think we all influence one another through speech or through written communication. The power of that is something that you can't underestimate. If you want a skill set that you absolutely need to develop, you need to grow into, it's to be a communicator. For example, I don't consider myself a writer. I've written 10 business books, but I don't consider myself a writer. I synthesize pieces of information and share them with audiences so they could learn and grow. Thoreau was a writer, right? He woke up in the morning and had to write. He was compelled to write or his day wasn't complete. But I think all of us are writers. All of us are verbal communicators. Hopefully we're really good listeners because that's the foundation of getting the inputs we need to actually have a dialogue instead of simply a monologue. So yeah, to me, I think those experiences were all about learning how to convey a message to an audience, often in very short bites. Certainly when I was a disc jockey, it was just enough before the song to do your thing. And then after the disc jockey days, when I was doing more talk radio, it was enough to engage a conversation where the guests were the records, if you will. I was trying to facilitate a dialogue and interaction and discussion and conflict and share ideas. And I think that was a powerful opportunity for learning.
I remember those disc jockey days quite well. And to me, one of the great lessons I learned from it, Joseph, was how much you could get done in 3.5 minutes.
That's right.
You put the record on, you run to the teletype machine, you tear that off, you see what maybe you can share on the next news, you empty the wastebasket, you may answer the phone. And to me, in fact, the very first seminars that I ever taught professionally were on time management. Benjamin Franklin, as you know, said, do you value life? Well, if you value life, then don't waste time because that's the stuff that life is made up of. So what you just mentioned triggered that thought in me. Now, something else you said, where you said you first started radio at 13, I don't know if you know it, but you got to jump on Paul Harvey. He didn't start till he was 14.
Well, I would love to have Paul Harvey's career and or your voice, which is very much a Paul Harvey voice. So I'll trade anything I have for those two things. Yeah, it was a good start. I actually got to meet Paul Harvey. Ironically, I did a presentation at the National Fathering Symposium, and he was the keynote speaker there, and I spoke as well. And these are legends of people who knew how to communicate, who knew how to storytell. And they made a living just sharing stories and the rest of the story they told us.
You stole my next line. Something else that you pointed out that is so vital. I love what you said about listening. I'll share an experience that I had early in my career. I live near Atlanta, Georgia. I was invited to direct a noon seminar there early in my career. And so the host asked me a couple of weeks ahead of time, what is your topic going to be? We'd like to put that in the program. I said, the topic is going to be speak your way to the top. She said, oh, that sounds very, no, I'm sorry. I said, listen your way to the top. Mm. And she said, oh, listen your way to the top. That sounds very interesting. So when I got there, I looked at the printed program and it had what I just said, speak your way to the top. And I said to the hostess without embarrassing her, this is an opportunity for me to drive home an important point. And so I mentioned to her that, could I say something to the group about this? And I mentioned to the group how that mix up had occurred, but our topic today is listen your way to the top. And it helped them see that our assumption, because we have so many instructions about speaking, but we don't have that many about listening. And I'm sure you've spent plenty of time with Stephen Covey's chapter on that, seek first to understand and then to be understood.
Yeah. The interesting thing is all of us assume we're really good listeners because we've been listening our whole lives, right? I mean, we get auditory input, which is hearing, and we translate it into ideas and thoughts, which is the listening part. The problem is we are often thinking about what we're about to say. And so that gets in the way of the complete closure of the communication loop. So somebody gives us an input, we heard it, We don't reflect back to them what we heard because it's very slow and inefficient to do that. But it gets us in trouble. And I'll give you my quick story on it. Once upon a time, there was the house next door was for sale and I saw the for sale sign out there. And I was at a grocery store and I saw a friend of mine and he said, Joseph, I'm going to be your neighbor. And I'm so excited. Like, this is so great. So when the moving trucks pulled in, I brought this big, gracious basket of welcoming gift. And the people who were at the door were actually mystified that their neighbor was so nice to them because it certainly wasn't the guy I thought was going to be opening the door. And later I contacted him. He goes, no. By neighbor, I meant I was moving to your side of town, right? And my obvious conclusion was neighbor is like super neighbor, like real neighbor. And I think I have a really good relationship with my neighbor, by the way, thanks to that mistake. But I think that's what happens to us. We have a frame of reference that we bring to a situation. We impute meaning quickly and we don't check out. Like, what do you mean? Where are you moving to? Right? Like, I didn't ask this follow-up question just to be able to clarify what was happening. So suffice it to say, we shortcut communication all the time and normally in the listening part of it.
Another example of that would be, of course, when we meet somebody. It gets back to what you said. We're thinking about what we are going to say next. And when we're introduced to somebody, I would imagine 75 to 80% of the people don't remember the name. Why? Because they're thinking that brilliant statement that they're going to make next. And it's something that I try to help people with is make sure that you get that name, because wasn't it Dale Carnegie who said, nothing is sweeter to us than the sound of our own name.
Yeah. And I think people miss that, right? Like they're so anxious about the introduction or they're so anxious about making a great impression that instead of impressing someone, they underwhelm them. And I think a lot of this is that we want to take such a real interest in people that we become interesting, not that we want to try to be interesting. The more, there's this great line that says, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Well, I'm kind of convinced that's what you know about who you know. I can know a lot of people, but not know much really about them. I can know them by name or title or whatever. But the more I know about what makes Bill tick, the more I understand him, the more able I am to network you with somebody else who might have similar interests that I know well. And really, I become a conduit for good and create value in the world. Just meeting a bunch of people and not being able to dive deeper to an understanding of what makes them tick does not really avail us a social network.
One example that comes to my mind immediately on that, Joseph, is that my wife and children and I were friends for many years of someone in nearby Athens, Georgia, where I started my career teaching at the University of Georgia. We were friends with this family for many, many years. We were guests in their home. We had dinner with them. Our children were friends. I would imagine for at least 25 years, we knew them. And when the father of the house died, and we read his obituary, we found out that he had been a member in World War II of the famed Flying Tigers. And here we had known this man all this time, but as you say, did we really know him? And I think back to my father who served in World War I. I was a history major in college. And every now and then I think to myself, I never asked him about those experiences. And what a great opportunity I missed. You have a wonderful communication point there, Joseph, and that is, don't just get to know people on the surface. How do we do that? By asking questions. And I've said often on the Biz Communication Show that when I meet somebody for the first time, I don't exactly have a tally that I'm keeping, but when the conversation ends, I'm wondering if I ask 20 questions about them, their profession, their hobbies, their birthplace, their travel, their hobbies, and so on, and they ask me none, that's not exactly scorekeeping, but it certainly makes an impression.
We have that sense, right? Do people really take an authentic interest in us? Are we taking an authentic interest? We're not tallying. Yeah, I love the Ford metaphor. So it's that family, occupation, recreation, and dreams. You know, just being able to say, tell me a little bit more about your family and tell me about what you do for a living. What do you do for fun? And what are you hoping for? What are some of your goals? What are your aspirations in your life? And I think that Ford metaphor is a powerful way for us just to frame those conversations.
I'm sure you're familiar with the story of how Dale Carnegie's career started. He was trying
to... You're giving me way too much credit. I have no idea how Dale Carnegie's... Go ahead. I just want to be honest.
Well, okay. Dale Carnegie decided he wanted to launch a career teaching human relations, which, as we know, he did exceptionally well. And at an early stage, there was a very prominent lady who was impressed by Dale Carnegie, and she said to him, Mr. Carnegie, I am going to have a party on Friday night, very many people that I think it would be good for you to meet. So would you like to come? And of course, he took advantage of that very kind opportunity. At the party, Dale Carnegie asked people, as you were just indicating, Joseph, about their family, their job, their travels, their hobbies, their likes, their dislikes, their education, sports, that kind of thing. He never said a thing about himself. The next day, the lady called him and said, oh, Mr. Carnegie, everybody, my phone has been ringing off the hook today. People tell me that you're the greatest conversationalist that they ever met. That's a great pattern to follow.
Yeah, I think that's the key. People want to be around people who take an interest in them. And I think people who listen, because we are living a life that we want to share. I mean, human beings like to talk about themselves. It's natural. And so if you can resist the urge to make it be about you, you, serving others serves us. It really is a wonderful gift. And I think you will always be successful by valuing the importance of other people.
Remarkably true. Joseph, we'll be back in a minute. And when we are, I'm going to ask you to share some of your tips for executives who want to improve their speaking skills. You are a renowned, highly, widely acclaimed professional speaker. So in just a few seconds, we'll come back and discuss that.
Do you wish you felt confident about giving speeches? Do you want to deal with difficult people constructively? And what about becoming more persuasive in sales? Then keep listening now to Dr. Bill Lampton. He spent 20 years in management, so he knows the communication skills you need for success. I urge you to call the Biz Communication Guy today for a no-cost but very valuable 30-minute discussion about your communication challenges. Call now, 678-316-4300. Again, that's 678-316-4300.
Yes, Joseph, let's talk now about your advice to an executive who comes to you. They've seen you on the platform with the way that you enthrall audiences and have for many years. And they say, Joseph, I'm not going to become a professional speaker, but there are many times that I have to have skill speaking to groups. It might be my department meeting, it might be my board, it might be a civic club, it might be my professional organization when they invite me to speak at a convention. Joseph, give me some tips, please, on how I can do that.
And I'm not pandering with this answer. Let me just be really clear. I think they need to reach out to someone like you, Bill, because what happens is I can give them classic tips, right? Like tips up the you know, to the end of the earth. The problem is that tips are not going to make you a better speaker. I can read tips on how to shoot a layup, right? I can read it all over the internet. That doesn't make it so that I can hit 50% from the free throw line. They really do need to hone the craft and work the skill. What I would tell them is that this is not something to neglect. It's not something to take lightly. It is the secret sauce to your success in life. You need to be able to influence people from large stages. You need to be able to influence people in the boardroom when there are 10 or 15 people. You need to be able to influence people one-on-one. So these skills are all different in how you approach each of these interactions, but they all come from an authentic clarity of what you want to say. They come from speaking with some organization but not to the point that you kill all of the emotion and naturalness of your messaging. It comes with being just out there and taking risks and trying new things. So, but that doesn't happen from tips. I mean, I can tell you, don't read your script, right? Like, please, whatever you do, just do not. I can't stand one more of these presentations. And I follow CEOs all the time, and sometimes they're amazing and blow my mind. Other times I'm like, thank God I'm following them, because this is going to be a little easier to have some real connection with the audience, just kind of cutting out of that mold, right? So there are things you can tell them tip-wise, but I would just say this is a skill set. Develop it, play with it, explore it, enhance it. I mean, as a professional speaker, I still change it up. I still work on new stuff. Every presentation I do, let's say it's a fairly standard amount of content. I've got my signature story at the beginning. I got a pretty signature story at the end. I'm still changing up at least 20, 30% of the material every time. And then I ask audiences, what do you remember about what I said? Like, what do you remember? And the things they remember, I anchor to, and I try to do more of that. And I just try to understand what is landing. Because it doesn't matter how cool I think it sounds. What matters is, did it hit the mark for them? Was it memorable? Did it activate them to do or think or feel something different? So I would just strongly encourage them not to think that they could do it on a few tips.
I gotta echo a couple of things that you said. One is, when you talk about who wants to hear a speaker reading a script. What I tell my speech coaching clients is that if you get up there and you read a presentation, your audience is going to think immediately, if this guy or this lady has not absorbed the information enough to just tell it to me, then it must not be important enough for me to get. And then I like, too, what you say about spontaneity and authenticity and being a little different every time. There's a phrase from theater that I constantly refer to. I never did any acting beyond college and a little bit of community theater, but I remember my college speech prof said to us that we always, no matter how many rehearsals you've been through, no matter how many times you've presented this, you always want to give the impression of the first time. And you know, Joseph, when you give a presentation that you've given many times, I like what you say, that you like to go back to it and you like to reshape it. So one of my favorite teaching aphorisms is, I say, let's be planned, but not canned.
Yeah, I think, well, there's so much there. I have to unpack it a bit. Every time I do, so I studied improv as well, improvisational comedy. Just the concept of you have just a suggestion and you have to act out through that suggestion. You have to physicalize, you know, if somebody says, oh, you're in a bowling alley, well, you instantly need to get a bowling ball and you have to give it a certain amount of weight. It can't just be, here's my bowling ball, right? I mean, it's got to have a certain quality. So practicing physicalizing your message and communicating your nonverbals, all of that's really powerful. But so often I'll start a speech by having been in the room there for a while with the same audience. We have a shared experience. Why not immediately call into something that's just happened with the speakers who've come from before? What if in the course of my speech, I can do callbacks to things that other people have said? So there's this synthesized message instead of here comes the keynote speaker and he just dropped in, or our CEO dropped in, but it doesn't thematically connect to anything else we're doing in the presentation. And just a quick example, the other day, this CEO was ahead of me. He was very, very good, very spontaneous, powerful speaker. And he was drawing on a whiteboard and he was saying, look, we've got some early adopters and they've done some great things. And just like all change, there's a middle level and we've got a lot of people in the middle. But we have some people who are kind of resisting this change. And I'd really like to see the people who are resisting the change kind of move at least to the middle, and maybe in the people in the middle really fully adopt. And so he did that. It was brilliant, on and on. At the very end of the speech, I went to that same whiteboard and I said, I hope now, after having heard the passion of your CEO and having heard the why of this important initiative, that no one, and I'm on his whiteboard, literally on his whiteboard, no one is in this category, and that everyone has moved over here. Now, I say that to you not because, I mean, once in a while I get lucky. I think that was a pretty lucky ending. But it was so impactful because instead of some guy who had a canned speech who came out of nowhere, he was actually integrating the message to the CEO's message. And we were aligned and people could see that they needed to make a change to be part of this trajectory. So I use it as an example. I mean, I'll do something weird and different next time. It might not work. But I'm going to trust that if my intention is to move an audience forward, and if I stay present in the room, listening with my eyes as well as my ears, and I put my message out there, that at times I'm going to be spontaneous in ways that pull it together. And I think that's what great speakers do. I don't consider myself a great speaker, but I do think that's how you move audiences' hearts as well as minds.
There are a lot of keepers every time that I talk with you. And one that I'm going to jot down and keep is listen with your eyes. That's very creative, imaginative, and impactful, because if you're a presenter and your only attention is to your notes, which I hope is all you have, if you have anything, if that's where your attention is, you're missing out a lot, because feedback tells you what's happening, what they're thinking, what they're needing. And I would think along those lines, Joseph, that in your keynote speeches, you also have interaction with your audience. You interact with them and you get them interacting with each other.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the first off, it's changed so much since I started speaking. In the old days, we were the only thing. People came into a room, you were on stage, they were looking at you. They had a
pad of paper. Right?
They had a pad of paper and that was all they had. Nowadays, they have this to compete against you, right? And what happens with this is some really cool cat videos on here if you haven't seen them. And boy, they're far more interesting than that lame speaker up there. So I'm going to watch some more cool kitty cats doing their thing. Whatever it is that people are into, they can consume immediately while you are on stage. And the sense is you're just competition for their top of mind interest. Now they're in the room, so theoretically they should be somewhat engaged, but I can't tell you how often this is the bane of the existence. But in some ways it's so great. I have to make it so that they have to look up and say, oh, wait, okay, you want me to raise my hand? Okay, wait, you want me to stand up? Okay, well, if I'm not, I can't be here looking at this. And if I'm not standing up, it's kind of obvious to the rest of the room. I'm wanting to put some pressure on them to be part of the presentation instead of a spectator where nobody asked them to stand up on this thing and there's no accountability to do that, right? So it's all about trying to say, we're in this together, we're creating a moment in time. I want to challenge the interest you have in those other distractors because this is relevant to your life and let's make you better through it.
One more point on that topic. Johnny Carson, some may not remember Johnny Carson, but he was one of the early and one of the longtime kings of late night television talk show host. And one thing that Johnny Carson had that I only found out, had as a rule that I only found out a couple of years ago, he had, of course, several guests each night on his show. He would not talk with the guests ahead of time. He put them in what was called the green room. He would not talk with them ahead of time. And in addition to that, he would not talk with them during commercials. Why? He said, because he wanted nothing canned. He wanted everything, as you say, very much impromptu almost. And this is a part of lively interaction. Joseph, we have time for a couple of minutes and one more vital question. And that one is, you deal with many executives. Those executives need to get honest, candid, constructive feedback. That's not easy to do because employees often think, well, if I say what I really have in mind, I won't be here much longer. I'll be demoted or I will be in the doghouse, as we would say here in Georgia. So How does an executive really generate honest, candid feedback that will be useful in the performance of the organization?
I think you have to show that you receive feedback well. I'll give you an example just real quick. And that is that I will frequently tell people, I need your feedback. Once upon a time, I was doing a presentation and I made a joke. This was in undergraduate. And I said, hey, look, I was defending my honors thesis as an undergraduate. And I said, look, you can do anything with statistics, right? You can make it. And I was defending this honors thesis. And my mentor at the time came to me afterwards and was just stern and powerful and very clear that this was a boundary I'd crossed and it wasn't acceptable. So I will tell that story to people and I'll say, look, that's what helped me become a better person, a better speaker, more thoughtful about where are the lines. Is there anything you saw today that I did that pushed the lines that I should be considering? And guess what? I've now just given them permission. I've just told them that hard feedback made me better and I'm so grateful for it. Would you please be kind enough to do the same? If there's anything, you don't have to manufacture if it's not there, but if it is, think of how I might be telling stories about how your feedback may be better. And I think that's a skill. Now, the reality is most of us don't want that feedback. We want it at a deep level, but in most of the way, it's like, I'm going to have to do something with it. So it is an interesting dance that we have, but I think you really have to give people permission and show them that you welcome it, you embrace it, and you get better, and you hope that they'll engage you that way.
The strongest leaders do that, don't they?
They do. They do say, I learned from my mistakes. Here's one of them I made. Can you tell me if there's anything you're seeing that I can make the world better?
If I learned from all my mistakes, I would be totally brilliant.
Well, you're pretty darn close. That one maybe got away from you. But other than that, you're in pretty good shape, Bill.
Joseph, this has been exactly what I expected and what viewers and listeners who know you expected. Highly informative, entertaining, educational, memorable, and practical. And I thank you so much for that. I know that the viewers of the Biz Communication Show and those who are listening to the podcast will want to get in touch with you. So please give us your contact information.
You can find me anywhere in the web if you have my name. I'm mercilessly all over. I'd rather use the time to talk about my contact information by encouraging people to contact you. Bill, you've been an incredible supporter of mine over the years. I know the kind of changes you make in people's lives as communicators. I want every focus to come to you and for people to reach out to you to improve their communication skills, make the world a better place.
Thank you so much, Joseph. Thank you for being with us today. And since you've given your contact information, I will give mine. Encourage you to go to my YouTube channel. And when you get to YouTube, go to the search bar and type in my YouTube moniker, which is Bill Lampton, PhD. I noticed just yesterday that starting in 2004, posting instructional videos, I have now posted over 440 videos. Maybe some of the earlier ones I wouldn't care for you to see, but many of the later ones involve interviews with people like Joseph Michelli and many other top business communication professionals that I would mention. And while you're on that YouTube channel, be sure to hit the subscribe button. Invite you to go to my website as the Biz Communication Guy, quite logically. My website is bizcommunicationguy.com. Then, and by the way, while you're there, you can, if you haven't done so already, you'll see instructions for subscribing to this podcast, which I hope you will do. Naturally, I would welcome a phone call from you after you've seen a review of my services for leaders and corporations. Give me a call. No obligation called initially. 678-316-4300. Let's talk about your communication challenges and problems and how I can assist you with them. Joseph, again, many thanks to you, my friend, for being a distinguished guest who helps us every time. Any closing comments that you would have to pull this all together?
I just think simply, thank you, Bill. We're all communicating all the time. Let's spend more time listening well so that we can craft messages that connect with other human beings in their head and their heart.
Well said, as always. Anything you say is well said. I respect your work. I respect our affiliation as colleagues, and certainly I welcome our friendship. To those of you listening to the Biz Communication Show on the podcast, thank you for being with us. Those on the video, thank you for being with us. Be with us again for another edition of the Biz Communication Show, where you learn winning words and ways and tips and strategies that will help you boost your business. Again, thank you, and we'll see you next time.